All right, guys. Hey, if I can grab your attention up here at the front, we're going to get started. And don't shoot the messenger, but the breakfast taco place didn't show up with the order. All right. So unfortunately, we got no food. So tonight, or this morning, we're shifting topics from parenting to fasting instead, just to adapt to the moment. Man, I'm thrilled that y'all have come to spend some time with us this morning. Just to think about taking some next steps, building off this past Sunday and what we saw in the text in Colossians 3 about what it looks like to be fathers. And you might find yourself in that situation right now or hoping to be, or maybe that's a distant memory in the rearview mirror, but there's grandparents or there's grandkids around as you serve as a grandparent. Wherever you find yourself, we're trusting that God's going to use this time to grow us and shape us. And what we're going to do, if you've got a Bible, let's start in Deuteronomy 6. I'm going to take some time to talk through some things in that passage. And then after a little bit of that, I'm going to welcome some friends up here to the stage, and we're just going to have a dialogue with some practical reflections on what it looks like to be faithful fathers in that regard. I'm sure throughout this week you've watched the news unfold. There's been all sorts of world issues that have come up. We saw that major earthquake in Haiti that was 7.2. Thousands have died, homes destroyed, right on the front end of a tropical storm coming through there that just brought greater devastation to things. And then at the same time that's going on, you've got everything erupting in Afghanistan, and you could see those images of people trying to jump on airplanes as they're getting ready to take off, and you see that desperation there. And what can happen in a 24/7 news cycle with instant video available to us, we are often aware of problems out in the world that we can do nothing about. In other words, our awareness surpasses our agency. And so we're exposed to problem after problem after problem, but there's no action we can take to address it. Well, in a similar way, parenting creates a environment just like that, except for instead of being at a distance, instead of being somewhere on the other side of the world, you have a front row seat to it instead. But you have the same challenge. Your awareness often surpasses your agency. There are things you have a front row seat to watch with your child, your son or daughter, and whether it's the first day back to school and watching them navigate the friend cycle there, or whether it's some sort of issue or rift they're having amongst siblings. You are aware of it, but you can't step in and fix it all the time, especially as they grow. And what happens is, in any circumstance where our awareness outstrips our anxiety, our awareness outstrips our agency, it can lead to anxiety. Because we're there, we're exposed to the problem, but there's no step that we can take to make it. And perhaps one of the places that you feel that lingering anxiety as a dad bubbling up the most is as it relates to the question of what's going to happen to your kids spiritually in the future. You know, there's no guarantee that there's three steps you can take right now that will ensure their spiritual vitality in the future. There's not some five-step plan I can give you to say, here's how you know that your children are going to walk well with the Lord for the rest of their life. And that's hard to know, hard to realize, that there's nothing I can do to guarantee what is most important to me about the future of my children. So that leaves us with the open question, is there anything we can do, any steps we can take, even if we can't guarantee it, instead at least to put our kids in a position to thrive spiritually as best as possible? And that's what we're going to find in Deuteronomy 6 this morning, because here's the good news. All the statistics and research indicate that the largest impact on a child's faith comes from the home. It's not necessarily about what school they're in, what town they grow up in, what church they go to. All of those are factors, but far and away the number one factor is what their family life is like. So there's opportunity there for you, but at the same time you may hear that and say, well, if I'm the number one factor in their spiritual future, man, that's a lot of pressure. The stakes are high. So what can we do that might put us in a position to help them thrive? Well, I want you to follow along with me as we read through Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 4. And we're just going to briefly look at three things I want you to be aware of that you can do as a dad, that you can embody as a father, that will put your children in the best position to thrive spiritually now and in the future. We'll start with verses 4 and 5. Here's what it says. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. So the first thing I want you to think about as we navigate through what can we do to put our kids in a position to thrive is to think about your attitude. Your attitude. That's the first element that this text is speaking about here. And you'll notice it's talking about, in this case, the attitude that we should have towards God and the attitude that we should foster in the family as it relates to God. And you'll see there in the text, Moses calls us to recognize authority. So you'll look back there and he talks about how the Lord is one. There's one God, no others. That's where the authority lies. He wants us to see authority. But then notice also in verse 5, the command he gives is you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. So he doesn't just talk about authority, but also affection. Those are the two dimensions of the attitude he's calling us to foster in the home. And what we're saying as we talk about how to put our kids in a position to thrive is that your attitude often has as much impact as your actions with your children. The way you carry yourself, the warmth you bring into the home, all of those elements. And here's what I want to suggest to you this morning is every one of us is wired differently. And you're going to look at this, and we've got a four-section chart here, all right? And we talked about two dimensions coming from this first portion of the passage that should be embodied in our attitude. And the first one, as we mentioned, was authority. Let's make that our y-axis. And then the other one that we saw in the text is affection. Let's call that our x-axis. So the question would be, where would you plot yourself as a dad? Okay, so the higher you are on the authority axis, the better demonstration of authority you have in your home. My guess is y'all are feeling pretty good on the authority front. That's like the default setting is, I'm going to drop the hammer, I'm going to lead, I'm going to do those things. But then also plot yourself in this affection category. Where do you find yourself from unaffectionate, uncompassionate, to deeply affectionate, deeply compassionate? And what this is laying out for us is if we want to create an environment where our kids thrive, not just now, but into the future, they're watching your attitude. They want to know not just will you lead me, but will you love me? There's that authority and affection dimension that need to be present there that we see here in Deuteronomy 6. Notice how the text goes on. It's going to show us a second thing here in verses 6 and 7. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. So the second dimension that the text is talking about here is not just your attitude, but your authenticity. Your authenticity. So it's not enough to just embody these realities of authority and affection. The text is also driving us to this fact that Moses is calling us to a consistent lifestyle in the home. You see the way he uses that language. These things shall be on your heart. You shall talk of them when you walk, when you lie, when you rise. In other words, in every setting, there's this consistency, this authenticity that when your kids look at you, who you are in public matches who you are in private. Who you are with them is who you are with everyone. There's that sense of you're the real deal, and that's captured there with this idea of being on the heart. That's this idea about our walk, that these are on our heart, these are things that are important to us, things that we live out, but also you see there, he speaks about how you talk about things when you sit down, when you go to bed, when you rise up. It's not enough to just walk only or talk only. You need to embody both realities. So again, plotting yourself on this chart, the two dimensions that Moses is talking about here when it comes to our authenticity is our walk and our talk. That each of us are naturally wired towards walking or talking out our faith more effectively than the other. So for some of you, you just feel like I'm the silent leader. They should see it through my actions, and my actions are consistent. So you're feeling really good on that y-axis. The walk is up. And then others of you, your default is, yeah, I'm going to do my best to live, but I'm just going to keep putting it in front of them. I'm going to keep talking about these things, keep raising these things. And the challenge can be when there's a divergence between walk and talk, authenticity collapses. And some of you probably grew up in homes where your parents talked a big game spiritually they didn't deliver on. Or you've seen hypocrisy show up in other places. And that's what Moses is speaking about here, is that when you walk and talk out your faith in the home, it sets your children up to thrive. So we've got attitude, we've got authenticity. Notice with me now in verses 8 and 9, the last dimension that he drives at here, he says, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontless between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So what we're going to notice here is that this third dimension that Moses speaks of after attitude and authenticity is application. Application, that we are helping our children and ourselves put these spiritual realities into practice. So you see these things about the sign on the hand, the frontlets between your eyes, writing about them on the doorposts of your home. There is this plan, this intentionality to keep these realities in front of us, to demonstrate these things, to show them to our people. And that's what we're talking about with the application, helping your children turn spiritual concepts into reality. They see that in your life, you're helping them do that in their life. And the way we find that playing out here in the text and in daily life is when we go back to our spectrum here, the two categories I want you to think about. Number one is in your conversations, and then the other is in your, what we'll call our channels. And what do I mean by those? So notice how he's talking about both in 6 and 7, now in 8 and 9. These are things we keep in front of our kids through our conversations. We speak about them in verse 7. We write about them in verse 9. What does it look like to have ongoing conversations in your home about spiritual matters? That when you're sitting around the dinner table, you're actually having intentional conversation, not just grabbing and going a bite to eat before you head out to the next ball practice or watch the next game on TV. What are you doing to think through how do you intentionally foster spiritual conversations that put in front of your kids the truth of God and help them make sense of it with everyday life? That's one dimension that we see here. But the other is in terms of conversation, not just conversations, but what we'll call channels. And what I mean by channels is simply, what are the environments that you're consistently putting your children in that will foster their spiritual growth and application of their faith? So there will be dads right now all around our city where the primary channels for them are sports. It's that travel ball team. It's that camp the kid's going to. And what they know is if I keep putting them in environments where they're exposed to this sport, where they have opportunity to grow, it's going to become more a part of who they are. They're going to embrace it. They're going to have better success at it. And they're going to pursue it with the same type of passion I want them to have. Well, how much more so is that true for us spiritually? Are we putting our kids in intentional positions, intentional channels that will help them be exposed to their faith? So what does that look like? Well, for one, that means with men like you that are connected here at Central, we're doing what we can to channel them into the life of our church with Trail Life or with American Heritage Girls, with connecting them on Sunday mornings in our preschool, our kids, or our student ministry, to take advantage of Wired Camp and our middle school retreat and our preteen weekend, other things like that where you're creating that environment for them. It also is through relationships where you're intentional to help them cultivate friendships with families that are other like-minded believers. And that doesn't mean I'm calling for some sort of isolation or pullback from the world. What I'm saying is your default setting, the channels that you create, designed in such a way to help your kids apply their faith in the same type of way that Moses is speaking of here when he talks about keeping it on their minds, putting it as frontlets on their eyes, and marking it on the doorposts of their homes. That's the kind of application that he's talking about. And that's one of the reasons why I'm particularly excited to spend the rest of our time together this morning welcoming some friends up here to join me on the stage, because we want to really focus in on this third dimension, this application, the practical aspects of parenting. And so if you're one of my four friends that's going to be joining me up here, why don't y'all start making your way? Y'all come pick out a chair up here and we'll reset. So what I wanted to do is ask a variety of guys in the church to come spend some time with us this morning, just speaking about their experiences as dads, discussing some of the lessons that they've learned, some of the big moments they've had, some of the best advice they've gotten. And my hope is that we'll be able to start this conversation on the stage, but if time allows, I hope we'll be able to pull in some questions from y'all in the audience. And so I just even now want you to be thinking about the possibilities of what you will be interested in discussing as time allows. So guys, hey, thanks for joining me. If y'all don't know this crew, we've got Bill Brown, Michael Mercer, Brady Britton, Donnie Fowler. We've got a good mix with folks at different ages and stages. Some are just taking kids off to college. Some are just trying to make things work with lots of kids still in the home. I put myself in that category. And then others are further along in the journey and can help us reflect back. So here's what I want to do, just to start things off, guys. I'd love for you, just in the briefest way, to tell us, name of your wife, ages and stages of your kids. And then I'd love to just hear you think, when you look back on your time parenting thus far, is there a defining moment that stands out, a unique experience, a pivotal turning point, something that happened? It might be fun, it might be serious, it might be sad, it might be heavy, it might be encouraging. Whatever that is that the Lord prompts you on, what happened in your family life that stands out to you today, and what takeaways did you have from that? I'm going to start on the far side down here with you, Donnie, and put you on the spot, and then we'll work our way down there. So our target would be to just tell us who your family is and reflect on one of those key memories.
Donnie Fowler, married for 24 years here in a couple weeks. And then we have four kids. We have Callie, who is 21. She's at Dallas Baptist University. We have Braden, who is 18. We just dropped him off at East Texas Baptist to play baseball. And then we have Grayson, who's a junior in high school at College Station, and Alyssa, who is 13. She's in eighth grade at College Station Middle School. And I think, you know, as I think about this, one of the biggest things that I have that I reflect on as it was really just becoming a parent in general. And really it's two things. And the first thing is Callie, when she was at 6, 9, and 12 months, literally to the day, she almost died three times. And it was kind of a wake-up call in the sense that it's not all about me. It's not all about myself and Nicole. And just how things can come at you real quick, and where my priorities needed to shift and focus more on family versus work. And the second thing is man, you created an eternal being. To me, that just kind of, it kind of drove it home as to what my responsibility is. And I've heard about it and I've seen about it through my parents, but to actually live it was a different thing for me. Yes. And I think that's something that really just hit home early on when we had Callie.
That's so great. Mm-hmm. Brady, how about you?
Brady Britton, my wife's name is Amanda. We have five children. Our oldest is Emily. She's 17, going into her senior year. We homeschool all five of them right now. We were in public school until, I think this is our fourth year homeschooling. And we'll get to more of that later. But our second oldest is 15, Ella, and she is technically a sophomore in high school, but she'll probably finish all but one class this year for graduation. And then our third is Beau. He is my first boy. He is 13, and he is all 13. And then our twins are Josh and Julia, and they're 10 years old. They are my first three are biological children, and Josh and Julia are adopted. They are also African American, so we've got some interesting dynamics in our home and different things we've got to teach and walk through. But I would say for or things that have been pivotal, or like Donnie said, just the aspect of life when we are biological children, just the creation that God made. You know, when I looked at my first three children, I thought, wow, these are three kids that God made. They're all different, and they all reflect Him, right? And then that took on a whole new meaning when we brought home our adopted children. So the experience of birth with the biological children was one thing, but the experience of adoption taught me something completely different about our God, and what He does for us and how He adopts us as children. And then the third thing that I'll give you is that was kind of pivotal for me in parenting was when I realized, kind of like Philip was talking about, you know, the authority stuff, and then what was the
authority and affection?
Affection. There you go. So obviously they need that when they're young, but you're really establishing authority primarily for obedience, right? And so it's as they get older, you've got to continually start pouring into them. And I had always heard growing up that they just need to obey, right? You don't need to give them a reason. And as I've learned and had more kids, I've realized the earlier you start that conversation with them about why they're obeying, why it's important to clean your room, why it's important to obey right away and bring it back to Scripture, the better obedience you'll get. If you just establish authority and say, I'm your dad, this is what you shall do, you know, they do need to learn that, but they also need to tie it back to Scripture and learn the why behind we have that expectation.
So. That's good. So it's not just because I said so every time?
That's what I heard growing up, right?
That's right. Michael, how about you?
Michael Mercer. My wife, Vicky, we've been married for 22 years. We have three children, Isabella, who is 16, Lily, who is 13, and Henry, who is 10. And one of the things that I reflect upon is how God is changing me by being a parent. Okay, He's constantly working on all of us. And so sanctification is a process. And one of the things that He's brought about change in my life was, I'll give an example. We homeschool, and I work from home. And my office is literally in my backyard, and that's the principal's office too. So my wife sent my son out to me to deal with some attitude issues. Well, I didn't get the text immediately. Well, it's been about 10, 15 minutes. He still hasn't shown up. So I look out the window, and I'm looking around for him, and I see him. He's under the playground in his little fort area, just hiding out. And, man, I was fixing to just rip that door open and go let him know that he was in the wrong and just let him know that that was not the right thing to do. And the Lord spoke to me and brought up how He is dealing, how He had dealt with the first sin in the world. So in Genesis, after Adam and Eve sinned, God came walking through the garden asking, "Where are you?" He knew exactly what had happened. He knew exactly what they had done and where they were. But how He dealt with them is the example that we are given on how to deal with our children.
That's good.
And, you know, that stopped me in my tracks, and that has changed how I deal with my son. My daughters, I never had that issue, but with my son, it's different. So that's one thing that we have to look back and see how Christ has dealt with His children.
I like that.
Well, if you hadn't guessed, I'm the token old guy up here. So I got up for these young guys. Anyway, I'm Bill Brown. My wife is Janet. We've been married for 35 years. We have three sons. Brad's 27, and Ben is 29, and Brian would have been 31 this year. So we decided early on in our marriage that Christ was going to be the foundation, and then everything we did would be in support of that. And to that end, you know, I coached, I did all the things. My boys were all very coordinated, could do any sport. They're exceptionally above average in everything they did. They enjoyed sports. We homeschooled, again, because we felt like there were three things that were going to happen. Time, which creates opportunity, and then we had to be credible in our walk. And so we spent, we homeschooled them, but created the time and opportunity to teach them about Christ, and they also got to see mom and dad living that out. And as time went on, we had the chance to put them in Brazos Christian School, mainly because they had a chance to play football, and I told my wife, I said, every kid in Texas who wants to play football should have a chance to play football. And the two coaches there were Boyd Brigman and Randy Roeder, and awesome guys for your kids to be around. So we were pouring into their lives. Things were going great. And then in October of 2012, we received a call that my son, Brian, was studying for his midterms to be a firefighter. He had done the EMTB the previous spring, and we were proud of him for that. He had had a seizure, and they'd taken him to the emergency room. But it had discovered in the CAT scan that he had a tumor, and his tumor turned out to be glioblastoma multiforme, which is a very deadly cancer. And so 10 days later, we're sitting on the edge of the bed. He's had his first surgery, and he asked the doctors come in to just talk to us as a about it. Jan and I were there with Brian. I'm sitting beside him. And Brian asked the doctor, well, how long do I have? And he said 13 months is the normal time. So here he is, 22 years old. He's being told he has 13 months to live. He wound up living 28 months. And there were some sweet times, and there were some times that were exceedingly difficult for him and therefore on our family. It's also, though, when God showed us how faithful he had been by allowing us to homeschool, my boys have an incredibly close. We had that time. We were able to build that foundation. And after he had his first surgery, Brian wrote this in his, Brian didn't write a lot, but he put it in notes during when Chris was preaching. And you'll appreciate this, those are firefighters. And he said, being a Christian is a lot like being a fireman. When the tone sounds, you have to be ready. It's not the time to get ready. You have to be ready. So Brian was rescued on February 25th of 2015. But that's certainly been a pivotal moment in our family. I'm thankful for the time. I'm thankful that God brought people into his life, into our lives, and gave me a passion to be a dad. That's the one thing I've loved being and doing.
That's great. And I hope you'll notice every one of them has a different story, but there's a common thread. And you may be able to summarize it as probably what you read about in the books and what you learned about when you were a kid and assumed to be the way to do it didn't always match up with meeting the moment that you face, whether it's a hardship like this or a circumstance in a playground or an adoption or a near-death experience for a child. When reality shows up, that's the real test of fatherhood. And part of what we want to do to help y'all as dads is to just think through not just the practical dimensions of what have y'all experienced, but also to think through, when you look back at some of the counsel, the advice you've gotten as dads, if you just had to take away one nugget that stuck with you, maybe it was a friend that you watched do something and it stood out to you, or it's an older guy who took you under his wing and pointed something out, or a little tidbit you picked up and something you read, or a podcast you listened to, or something your wife said to you, or a child that stuck with you. If you just had to say, what's one of those pieces of parenting advice that you've held on to? Walk us through that. And we'll start again with you, Donnie, and work our way down. And then after that, I hope to create some time for y'all to ask some questions on your mind.
Yeah, so gosh, one of the greatest pieces of advice that I had received was from a friend of mine who was just a few years older than me, but had already traipsed through the situation of his kids leaving the nest. And when my oldest was getting ready to leave the nest, and those days were coming, I felt anxiousness. I felt, what it's going to be like to not have her, to be able to touch her on a daily basis, you know. And so those things kind of ran through my mind in that adjustment period. And so I asked a friend of mine, I said, how did you adjust when your two daughters left? And he still had two sons at home as well that were younger. But he said he's come to the point to where they have their own walk with Christ, and God's going to take them where he wants them to be. And so just to rest in that fact, and it's the same thing for all of you and for all of us. I mean, the Lord has a plan for you, and he's going to take you in that certain direction, even though I may not agree with it, right? And I need to trust him for what he's got planned. I mean, I never would have thought that my daughter would have gone to Dallas Baptist University, met a guy that she's very serious with who is from Brazil, who wants to stay in Brazil. And she just got back from a 48 days in Brazil. And she's very outgoing, and it has crossed my mind and how serious they are that she may end up in Brazil. And so how I need to rest in the fact that she is walking well with the Lord, and that's the plan that she has for her, and that he has for her. And so, just coming to grips with the fact that it's her walk with Christ, and Christ is going to put her in that spot, and I need to be content with that. I need to live with that. So that advice to me was just that I can't control where I want my kids, although I want them to be all right here. We've got five houses in our cul-de-sac. It'd be great to have each one in each of the other houses, right? Probably not going to work out that way, you know. So let them go. Let the Lord take them and work on them and put them where he wants them. It's kind of the best advice I'd have. It just kind of takes that pressure off.
That's good.
That anxiety.
All right, I guess I'm next again. I would say the best advice I've gotten from two men in my life when I was struggling with one, it may have been both of our adopted children. When I'm not sure how many of y'all know families that have adopted children or whatnot, but if they're adopted, they're from a trauma background, and so there are some unique challenges to that. In addition, one of our kids is very strong-willed, which adds another unique challenge. In addition, her motivator is control, which adds another unique challenge. So it is a counselor that told me one time, that's not the advice I'm going to tell you, but not the best advice, but it was good. But what I'm going to tell you is that he said that, you're experiencing one of the toughest kinds of kids to raise. And so we were struggling with finding advice. And so he wasn't the best advice I got, but the best advice I got was from godly men. And they told me that, Brady, you'll find that the world's wisdom will help you. But God knows your child better than anyone else. And you are their parent. And God will equip you and has given you everything you need to raise your child. So go to the Lord in prayer, stay in scripture, and be patient and let God work. And one of the things that's been neat to see is as varied as all of our children are, I don't know how many of y'all have seen the video by Louis Giglio about the stars and if the earth were the size of a golf ball, you know, and then how huge our universe is, saying that God created that and how huge our God is. Well, in a similar sense, our kids are varied. And the cool thing about that is they all reflect God. In the same sense, as wide as our universe is, our kids' backgrounds and dynamics and none of us are exactly the same as anyone else in our experience and how we look and everything. And so there is no way any of us in this room can figure out how to raise our kids on our own. I'm just going to say that unequivocally. But if we go to the Lord in prayer, he will equip you. And it's not always easy, but he is faithful.
That's good.
There have been a culmination of a lot of different things that have I've been able to bring into my family, and Randy's been key in that. But first and foremost, one of the things that I've found is when my relationship with my Creator is not right, I can't lead well. And when my relationship with my Creator isn't right, my relationship with my wife isn't right. And then we can't lead well. So first, your relationship with your Creator, first and foremost. Second, with your wife. Third, with your kids. And when we, as a couple, have that done, you know, in place properly, it doesn't solve all the problems, but we have peace in the decisions that we make for our kids. And without that, I struggle. I mean, we struggle as a family when we are not focused on that. And that's part of also the Hebrews. So we live out Hebrews in our home, the Hebrews verses. That is essential. That is key. So, like I said, I can't point to one, you know, one individual, but it's just a culmination of a, you know, brotherly love and Christian brothers pouring into us. That's
good. Yeah, I was the two. I'm gonna give two. One was slow it down, enjoy the journey. Don't always look forward, or don't look forward to, well, I'll like my kids more when they're 6 years old, not 6 months old, or when they start school, or when they start speaking. But to enjoy the journey between those big times, big moments, big changes, but to enjoy every moment. Don't look too far ahead. It passes quickly. And the second thing really was that, and James Dobson was big on this, he said that kids come out of the womb hardwired, and need to learn to take that personality, and it's who God has made them that way. And so you can't parent every child, your own children, exactly the same. You have to be, get to parent to their personality while you stay consistent with them all. So slow it down, enjoy the journey. And the kids, it's amazing to me, with the boys the ages they are now, they still have the same personality as they had when they were 2, 3, 4 years old. So good or bad, they do.
That's fascinating. And again, as we're walking through this advice, I think in each case, this came in the context of a relationship. You know, you mentioned James Dobson as one of those, but you also had that second one. But for each one of y'all, there was a person in your life who knew God well enough and knew you well enough to be able to speak truth into your life at the right moment. And I would just ask y'all, as you're wrestling through what life for you is as a dad, are those two realities true? That you've got people who are close to you in your life, who are close enough to God that they might be able to bring godly wisdom into your life, and close enough to you that they feel the comfort to be open and direct with you about the things that they're seeing in your life. And that's one of the gifts of a church like Central. Through our life groups, you're going to find that life-on-life connection with people at similar ages and stages. But in addition to that, as a multi-generational church, we've got the benefit of learning from the wisdom of those that have gone before us. That's one of the things I think is really cool about what you do, Bill, over with the Wallace Life Group, is Bill and Janet have stepped in a sense, as a mentor couple for them, and been able to pour their lives into some of these families that are in the early stages of raising them. It's another reason why we're getting our re-engage ministry for marriage lifted off, because we're going to have mentor couples that can invest in you and strengthen your marriage. We're trying to create those environments in order to do that. And we've got about 10 or 15 minutes left, and I want to get to a couple of questions from y'all. So even now, I'd like for you to be thinking of it. But as you do that, before I take the first one, you're going to notice on your tables, I've got a pen and a card. And if you haven't already grabbed one of those, grab one. I want you to help me out with something. We're always thinking ahead about where we're going as a church and what we're doing in our men's ministry. And there's two things I want to put on your radar. The first one is, as I mentioned this past Sunday, during the message, our men's stakeout is going to be Sunday night, October 24th. October 24th, we're going to have my friend Jimmy Scroggins with us, who is going to speak on the idea of full circle manhood. So I want you to already be making plans to mark that, protect that on your calendar, and make plans to bring some friends. But in addition to that, we're really excited to be in the early stages of finalizing plans to do another men's retreat this January. And those dates are going to be January 21st through the 23rd. That's a Friday through a Sunday. And what I want you to do as we're taking these last 10, 15 minutes together as a group is just take some time on that card to say, what are the things on your mind, on your heart, that you would love to be better equipped on as a man? You don't have to think exclusively through the dad lens or the husband lens, but we're working on plans for our January retreat, I'd just love for you to, as we're talking, jot down three ideas that come to mind that say, man, if I could have a breakthrough in this spiritual discipline or this theological understanding or this practical element, this relationship I foster, this challenge that I face, just what comes to mind. And as we're continuing the conversation, just jot those down. And what I'll ask you to do is when we wrap up our time today, you can just leave those there in the middle of the table and we'll grab them and just get some of that feedback from you. So now that I've distracted with you with thinking about ideas on topics, let me circle back to ask you what questions are on your mind. We've got a great panel with some wisdom, so if you wouldn't mind raising your hand, telling us who you are, and asking that question. Sometimes it takes the longest to get the first one, especially when the breakfast tacos don't show up. So if you know you want to raise something, don't be shy. So who wants to kick us off?
Yeah, we did. I took each boy away. Again, James Dobson had his Preparing for Adolescence series, and we would take a weekend. And one of the boys always said, "Dad, is this that awkward talk?" And I said, "Yes, is this going to be part of that? Is that awkward talk?" And we always did that in the car, so that while we were driving. So that's that tapes. And we made sure that we read the Bible each night with them. And believe it or not, when they were young, I would sing a praise hymn to them. And
prove it. Let's hear it.
Well, my wife says that's why none of them can sing a song correctly, because I didn't know the words, but they learned whatever I sang. So she says I ruined them that way. But and we prayed every night together. We were very, very intentional about that. So,
that's great. Yeah. Anybody else have something come to mind? Don't feel like you have to chip in, but if something comes to mind, feel free to.
I'd say the breakfast table and the dinner table are probably two of our best moments. Just being intentional with conversation, teaching, just like Deuteronomy 6 says, to, you know, just continually have those conversations, have scripture around your house, and back it up, you know, live it. And then probably the best investment of time other than that for us has been bedtime and in morning time. So waking them up, having a moment with them, and then at bedtime. For us, it takes forever, and it bothers me sometimes because there's so many other things to do. But that time with them at night, when they're calmed down and they've had time to process the day, really, that's when they, for us, that's when they open up the most, and they can actually conversate about why they were angry earlier in the day or what happened at school when they were in public school. So those were the best times for us, or are the best times for us.
Taking advantage of their procrastination from wanting to go to bed for substantive conversation. Don't miss the opportunity. Yeah. Anybody else want to jump in on that? I think I mentioned it before, but one of the tools that I use with our boys that's similar to the James Dobson material you talked about is a resource called Passport to Purity by an organization called Family Life. And it's designed to foster a getaway weekend with your child to talk about the birds and the bees, talk about how their body's going to change, talk about peer pressure, all the things they'll encounter as they step into the preteen and teenage years. And what it's designed to do is wrap around substantive conversations in the car with audio that they're listening to and to build it around an experience. And I can tell you right now, every one of the three boys I've had that done that with can tell you about where we went. They can still recall some of the things we discussed. And it establishes a reference point for them. And the hard thing to Bo's question is when it comes to that individual touch point, the more kids you have, the more reps that requires, and the harder it is to feel like you can pull it off. So what I try to do is think about milestone moments in their life and measurable moments through the year. So one thing we'll do is, like I mentioned, we do that when they're in the third grade with that first touch point in the birds and the bees, because we want them to hear it from us before anybody else. Others might choose to do that later. But then in addition to that, just those milestone moments during a year, what I'll do is every year before school starts back, I'll take them one-on-one. We'll go to Sonic, let them get their favorite item. We'll have a conversation about what to expect for the year. What are you excited about? What are you scared about? What are you unsure about? What questions do you have? And then I'll talk to them about my lived experience going through that grade and some of the opportunities and challenges I saw, and just help them get in a frame of mind. And then we'll show up to Academy and let them just roam the aisles for 45 minutes. They got to have a prenuptial agreement before we walk in that we're not buying anything on this trip, but you might be able to look at something and put it on your Christmas or birthday list. But it's funny, like each of them will gravitate towards different areas. We can play some things in there. I'm wondering if by this point over the last couple weeks, if Academy's got my picture on their security camera, because they see this guy keep walking in with different kids, spending 45 minutes and leaving, not paying for anything. I may be there. They might be concerned about what I'm really doing in there, but I can tell you my kids look forward to that every year, and it creates that substantive starting point for the school year in a way that can create a breakthrough. That might not be the right fit for you, but the purpose is, am I creating the space for that and fostering the intentionality to pursue that? Who else would like to jump in with a question for us? Yeah. I got you. How'd y'all navigate having some of those early conversations in terms of when and how?
Yeah, I know for us, it was really just as they allow you to do that, right? Just take advantage of what's there and understand the age that they're at. Eventually, it gets to that point. For us, it just required a lot of patience. And, you know, having two boys myself, a lot of that doesn't change. They will still give you about a 2-minute time frame to answer the question, and then they're gone, right? So none of that really changes for my boys. But I know from our perspective, age makes a difference as far as how direct I am. We did the passport to purity. Nicole did it with the girls, and I did it with the boys. You know, when Nicole got into it, she got all the plans and did all the preparation and stuff. And you know, I'm kind of ashamed of this, but I think we got through our passport pure. It's a weekend thing. We were probably done in about 3 hours. I mean, it was just more straight to the point, you know, based on their where they were from an age standpoint. I mean, they were, you know, 10, 11, 12 in that time frame. I don't remember specific ages, but we did the same thing. We took a trip. But, you know, as far as for you that have girls and you go through those same type discussions, if you do the passport pure or whatever, it's always important to come around the back end and say, hey, I understand. Right. And if they have any questions for you, that you can answer those questions. You know, one of the things, and I'll be honest with you, Alyssa is 13. And so she started her, you know, the period and all that type of stuff right now. And you know, sometimes they feel just odd. You know, I don't know if they feel ashamed. They have different emotions during that time. But to have a dad that comes in and says, hey, I get it. It's part of life. I'm here with you. It's all good. You know, I mean, even though Nicole's already talked to her about it, just to come behind him and reiterate in positivity with, hey, this is a natural process. But those things just kind of just depends on the age. But for us, it was just continuing to be faithful to bring up the scripture, to answer those questions as it allows. And so just don't run from those opportunities, which it doesn't sound like you're doing that, Justin. So, I mean, you know, kudos to you. Keep working. Yeah.
Well, at that age group, I would suggest chickens, rabbits. It worked for us. I mean, it answered a lot of questions. And, you know, we can stand there and talk with the kids, you know, at that age group. And they get an understanding of that. And it's they're not distracted, you know. So it leads to other conversations later as well that you can have. So that's what we did. We have, you know, it came naturally. I mean, we didn't intentionally have chickens and rabbits and things like that, but, you know, conversations would come up because of that, so.
I'm remembering a similar moment for us, but it was at the zoo in the lion exhibit, and Dad, what's going on in there? Made for an interesting starting point, and I think that always the tension is, like, how much do I give them and when? And I don't think there's a, here's the exact answer at a different age and stage. What you want to do, though, is make sure you are fostering an environment in your home where when your kids are curious, you're a trusted, incredible source for them to come. So you don't blow them off, you don't dismiss things, you don't reprimand them or give them more than they probably could handle at that point. Where you're trying to build confidence in, like, the easy ongoing things, so when the more challenging things come and they say, who can I go to about this? It's not anybody but Dad, because I don't want to deal with that. It's, you know, that's my first stop is coming to him. We're going to try to squeeze in one more. It looks like we got Mark in the back. Are you going to add a perspective? Let me put out a last call if anybody wants to finish us off with one more question.
My name's Trey Nixon. I have three boys. They're all adults. But the thing that I learned, my wife and I learned early on, was don't leave it up to someone else. Don't leave it up to the schools. Don't leave it up to somebody, you know, their friends, their peers, or whatever it is, to guide them in the direction that you need them to go. Because if you do, you'll be the last person to find out. And in all actuality, you want to be the first person. So that trust, that bond, that relationship that you establish with your children early on has to be one where they can trust come to you and not want to go somewhere else. And how you cultivate that in your home, it's got to be Christ-centered.
That's good. It's really good. And I'll add this to wrap up our time with the panel is, that's true not just with schools, that's true with us here at Central. The temptation can be to think I can outsource the spiritual development of my kid to the church. That's what it's there for. When in reality, we want to keep putting in front of you that you as parents are the primary disciplers of your kids. And we want to come alongside you to partner with you. We're not asking you to partner with us. That's why we host conversations like this. That's why we try to make things available in our Faith at Home Center. That's why we want to get you in life groups with like-minded people that will help you grow together, because we want you to be equipped to do those things yourself. And I hope our panel contributed to that. So will you all join me in thanking these guys for serving us this morning? And if you haven't finished filling out your card, go ahead and do that. Leave it on your table now. I'm going to leave y'all with a question to discuss around your table as time allows, which is just, what was the takeaway for you today? Was there a nugget that stood out, an insight that captured your attention, a thought that you're leaving with that you didn't come in with? I want you to be able to have that conversation around the table. I also want to remind you that two Wednesday nights from now will be our next Central Family Celebration, and I hope you make plans to bring your family out to just be a part of celebrating all the incredible things the Lord's doing in our midst. So I'm going to close in a word of prayer, and then y'all can have that table discussion, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time, guys. Lord, we're just grateful for this time to come together because we know iron sharpens iron, and then when we hear the stories of others in our midst, it strengthens us, it refreshes us, and I pray even now, God, that you would meet the desires of those in here to be faithful fathers and do abundantly more than we could ask or think in that regard, God, that you would help us endure the hard times, enjoy the good times, and to keep pressing on. Lord, there's no greater gift that you've given us besides our salvation in Jesus than the gift of family, the gift of marriage, the gift of children. And I pray that we wouldn't take it for granted. I pray that we wouldn't just treat it as a burden, but we would see it for the blessing that it is, that our children are a heritage from the Lord, and our legacy will be defined as much or more by how we're faithful stewards of the opportunity to raise your kids as anything we do, the successes we have, the accomplishments we achieve, the job success that we experience. And all of that pales in comparison to being faithful in the stewardship you've given us in the home. And I pray that you would help us to be faithful towards that end. And we ask this in Christ's name. Amen. Y'all enjoy some table conversation, and we'll see you soon.